Hello and welcome to the Raw podcast brought to you by the Sunderland Echo. We're back for another Monday podcast after Sunderland were beaten 1-0 against Watford at Vicarage Road. My name's Joe Nicholson and I'm joined by my fellow Sunderland writer at the Echo, Phil Smith. Phil, how are you doing this morning after Saturday's trip to Watford?
Yeah, not bad, thank you. I think like everybody else really, probably just ready for the end of the season now. It's been obviously quite a tough few months and doesn't really feel like we're learning a huge amount, to be honest, at the moment. So I think like everybody else ready for maybe a bit of a fresh start, I think, and hopefully kind of draw a line a bit under the season and hopefully look forward to some better days ahead, because it's been a pretty tough watch of late.
Yeah, it was another disappointing afternoon on Saturday. It's now just 2 wins in 14 league games for Sunderland, 2 wins in 12 since Mike Dodds was named interim head coach. And as you said, in that first half against Watford, it felt like two teams that didn't have a lot to play for in terms of promotion and relegation. Two teams that were playing with like a back three and wing backs and didn't really create many chances between them. I felt Sunderland were a bit better in the second half, although I can't really remember the Watford goalkeeper, Daniel Backman, having too many like big saves to make. There was that one from Callum Stiles at the end. Wasn't there, but I think most of them were quite comfortable for him. So what were kind of your main takeaways from the game?
Yeah, I thought it was, as you said, I thought it was a really poor game, especially the first half an hour where, like you say, there was a really strong end of season feel. Both teams lacked a bit of quality, I think, maybe a bit of ambition as well. I think, to be fair, Sunderland did end the first half on top. If you think there was the one where Clark cut in and sort of curled his effort just wide of the far post. Rigg obviously had a big chance when he was played through on goal. That was quite a nice counter-attack where Aushish played him in. Not sure if Backman saved that or not. And then Hume obviously had one, didn't he, where the keeper, I thought that was a good save where he raced off his line and blocked. And I did think, you know, Sunderland had some good chances at the start of the second half as well. You know, good chances that, you know, not massively clear-cut chances, but ones that Jack Clark would definitely have taken earlier in the season. I guess that's just one of those things. So I did feel that on balance, I thought Sunderland were probably unlucky to lose. You know, Patterson made one good block off, I think it was Kiembe's volley, wasn't it, about midway through the second half. Other than that, he didn't really have a lot to do. Maybe could have done better with the actual goal itself. So it was a harsh result on Sunderland, just in that Watford produced so little really over the course of the game. And even their head coach, John Cleverley, afterwards kind of said they were bang average, you know, and probably a little bit fortunate to win. So I do think Sunderland, it was better than the Millwall game. It was better than some of their recent performances. I do think they were probably a little bit unlucky to lose. But having said that, you know, it still feels like there's been a bit of a shift late, and they feel like a bit more of a counter-attacking team, a bit more of a defence-first team. And the reality is that at the moment, they're just not getting results playing that way. You know, they took 4 points from Leeds and West Brom, which, to be fair, I think we all said was like a good return against that calibre of opposition. But, you know, the goal score and statistics especially speak for themselves of late. So, and we always say it's a big cliche, but if you're going to play that way, you have to get results. Otherwise, you know, there's going to be a lot of negativity, because if the football's not great to watch and you're not kind of getting the rewards from playing that way, then it's kind of, you kind of wonder what the point of it is. So, you know, I think it was a better performance. It definitely wasn't a sort of one where they definitely deserved to lose. But I still think, you know, going forward, I think there's a lot of question marks at the moment.
Yeah, you alluded to it there, that Sunderland are not, they're not looking as good of an attacking force as they were earlier in the season. They're still very reliant on Jack Clark. And you say he had a few chances that you probably would have taken earlier in the season. And when he has an off day, then the whole kind of attacking play just isn't kind of clicking. And then it takes one lapse of concentration at the back, which we saw on Saturday. And then Watford's substitute Ryan Andrews got sent through on goal and took his chance. But what did you make of the team selection? Firstly, to stick with a back three and wing backs. I thought perhaps he might go to a back four, Mike Dodds against Watford, but he stuck to the system that he had played in recent weeks, and also the decision to play Adil Aushish up front. He came into the side, it was one of two changes, with Bradley Dack dropping out of the squad, and it was a tough shift for him, wasn't it, playing up there at Vicarage Road?
Yeah, I was like you. I thought he would switch to a five, try and get some sort of bodies higher up the pitch. I thought it was probably I felt like it was a little bit of a missed opportunity to play Styles in midfield as well, just in terms of like Sunderland obviously have a decision about whether they're going to sign him in the summer. And I thought maybe this was a good chance to sort of see him in a different position against a decent opponent and see how they go. Kind of makes me wonder, is their mind already made up either way sort of thing at the moment? Because that seemed like a good chance. I was surprised they didn't take that. The one thing I would say is that their best chances in the game did come when they had the back five rather than the back four. You know, Dodds obviously did switch to a back four for the latter stages of the game. And actually, I don't think you could say that Sunderland created a huge amount more than they had previously. There was obviously that one where Hamir went through, passed it to Roberts, who couldn't get the ball out from under his feet, and then Batman saved from Styles. But it wasn't as if when they went to a back four, they were suddenly way more aggressive. I thought Ashish did look isolated for the most part. You could tell he was kind of frustrated, I think, both through the game when he came off. At the same time, you know, he very nearly gets an assist for that Rig one in particular, didn't he? Where he did really well to carry the ball basically all the way through the Watford half and then picked a good moment to play the pass as well. So I was surprised with the selection. I think at the moment, I feel like we're not learning a huge amount about these players. I think that I assume, given everything that Sunderland have said over the last 18 months or 2 years, they want this really front foot possession style. They want to get high up the pitch. They want to play a high line. They want to dominate possession. I don't really see at the moment how what they're doing is setting them up to do that. So I suppose the question mark is, are they just trying to get to the end of the season kind of relatively unscathed? Or are we seeing, you know, a more broader shift where they're maybe moving away from that strategy or that idea? I don't really know. So yeah, it's quite hard to, there's a big gap at the moment, I think, between what Sunderland, you know, say they want to be and what we're actually seeing. Is that just because of availability and the situation and there's going to be a bit of a reset in the summer? I don't know. I hope so, because I think, you know, it's a hell of a lot less entertaining to watch than it was last season, even for the first half of this season, even if, you know, being fair, they did probably create enough to score on Saturday. But even that was mostly through counter-attacking. You know, there was very, very little sort of sustained periods of possession that ended in a chance. It was mostly sort of capitalising on a Watford error and catching them out on the break. So I think that's a really interesting sort of aspect of what's happening at the moment is, you know, as I say, is this a case of just trying to get to the end of the season and take stock, or is it a bit more of a general shift? It'll be interesting to see kind of which one that is.
Yeah, certainly a lot of big decisions to make in the summer, and the striker talk has been something that we've discussed a lot kind of throughout the season. But with Ashish playing up front, I suppose Dodds had to make changes because Dan Neil's been injured in midfield. So that meant Joe Bellingham moves back into midfield, and that kind of leaves a void up front. Nazir Roussin's still unavailable. He's out injured. So then Dodds was probably left with the decision. Does he play Mason Burstow up there? Does he play Hamir up there? Obviously, Burstow, we've said before, highly unlikely to be there next season because he's on loan from Chelsea. Hamir is obviously Sunderland's player and signed a long-term contract in the summer. And then the other option was to play someone like Ashish up there, which he did, or Bradley Dack, who played there against Millwall. But it does kind of seem a little bit quite damning on someone like Hamir, who Sunderland have brought in on a long-term contract. And then you're playing people that are out of position. Someone like Ashish is playing up front while Hamir's on the bench. I know he did come off the bench in the second half, but where do you kind of see the future for him? Because probably a loan move next season probably be a kind of logical thing to do, because yeah, he hasn't looked ready for a championship level, has he, when we have seen him play?
Yeah, I think that you can obviously see Ashish, I think, is going to be part of the squad next season, isn't he? I think he's, you know, given the game time he's had, and I think by and large, we've seen some positive signs from him. So I can kind of understand that it was another opportunity to get him more championship exposure and more experience. With Hamir, I think that it's going to be a big pre-season for him, because the one sort of thing that's been said consistently since he came into the club by all three head coaches who've looked after him this year is that he's a really good finisher behind the scenes, and they definitely feel that there's a player in there. What they've obviously, where they feel he's lacking, is that they feel that maybe physically he's not yet at the level either to really sort of go up against the sort of physical experience championship centre halves that we're used to and compete with them. And also, I think the pressing side of things, I think they feel that he's got some development to do before he can sort of carry out those pressing demands. So I suppose that then follows that it's a really big pre-season for him to see if he can get to that level in terms of his fitness. I think that the important thing is that Hamir is playing football next season. If he's not going to break through at Sunderland, then, you know, realistically, Sunderland need to try and recover some of his value, because although he's obviously at the end of his contract at Benfica, there was obviously some compensation involved. So he was an investment. And so Sunderland needs him to sort of rebuild that value, if you like, next year. And if he's not going to be involved at Sunderland, then they need him out playing somewhere. And I suppose in that context, doesn't matter too much whether it's in the UK or whether it's abroad. I suppose probably not. So I can definitely see that happening if he comes back for pre-season and he's not up to the sort of level that Sunderland feel he's going to play, because I think there will definitely be interest in Europe, because his sort of goal scoring record at youth level was pretty good and he was very highly rated. You know, all the head coaches this year have said that, you know, they feel like if it's a game where Sunderland are going to dominate the ball, where they're going to create chances, there's going to be balls dropping in the six-yard box, there's going to be crosses. They all feel Hamir can succeed in that environment because they feel he's a good finisher. We haven't massively seen that this season. I feel like maybe a couple of chances passed him by and his confidence got knocked. But we did see in pre-season that he can finish.
Mm.
So I do think there's a scenario in which he can find his way back to the team. But I agree with you that it does look quite a long way off at the moment. And clearly what we've seen is they don't feel yet he's going to be in a position to go and start away at Watford, away at Leeds, away at West Brom. Is that going to change over the summer? Possibly. But at the moment, yeah, I definitely wouldn't rule out, you know, potentially a loan abroad, see if he can rediscover that confidence more than anything. But yeah, we'll have to wait and see. Obviously, that would then leave Sunderland with quite a bit of recruiting to do if Bairstow does go. Then you've got Roosen. Yeah. Roosen's probably been better as a wide player from what we've seen, cutting in. Meander probably looks the same if he's part of the squad next season. So that only really leaves you with Job, to be honest, who I think definitely could be a success in that role and has shown some really good attributes at times. So, yeah, I think we've all known it for quite a while now, but I think it's just been underlined of late that that's the big summer focus and priority for Sunderland, really.
Yeah, as you say there, yeah, certainly expect at least one striker signing in the summer. But in terms of outgoings, just looking at the players who are out of contract, obviously we've mentioned Bairstow, he's on loan from Chelsea and he'll go back there. He wasn't in the squad on Saturday. Neither was Bradley Dack, who is out of contract. Sunderland do have a one-year option, but it seems unlikely that they will trigger that. Then there's Corey Evans, who is out of contract this summer. There's a year option on his contract as well. And then you mentioned as well, Callum Stiles earlier, an initial loan deal. Sunderland do have an option of making that deal permanent. Out of them, can you see any of them staying? I mean, Dack and Bairstow seem very unlikely. Evans, we've seen him kind of come off the bench, haven't we, the last 2 weeks, and is a very influential member in the dressing room, but obviously he's been out for just over a year, hasn't he? And it's a big ask to come back and get back to the level that he was at. So what do you kind of see happening with those players that we've mentioned?
Yeah, I think it's hard to see Bairstow and Dak back next year, as you mentioned. I think Bairstow, to be honest, is someone who they definitely rate quite highly, you know, as he sort of told you in earlier in the season. Sunderland initially wanted to sign him on a permanent last summer, which Chelsea didn't want to do because they rated him so highly. So I definitely think he's someone who Sunderland will kind of keep track of. But I just think whether it's primarily because of confidence or what, it just hasn't worked out, has it? And I think realistically, he probably needs a bit of a fresh start somewhere and to try and get some momentum. So I'd be really surprised, to be honest, if Sunderland pursued that. Dak, you know, I think he just hasn't played enough football, has he really? I actually think there have been times when he's looked like a good, experienced option when he's been on the pitch. But we just haven't seen enough of him. And I think, you know, I asked Dodds after the game on Saturday whether those two not being in the squad was kind of looking to the future because they're realistically not going to be around. He did say that it wasn't necessarily purely because of that. Dak, he said, hadn't actually been able to train much during the week because of a little knock. So it wasn't just that he was almost kind of writing their Sunderland futures off, but actually that probably is quite revealing in itself because that's kind of been the story of Dak's season. He just hasn't been available consistently enough to make an impact. With Evans and Stiles, I think it's slightly trickier. Again, with Stiles, we know that Sunderland have tracked him across multiple windows, really. He was, you know, he's not someone who, you know, just Michael Beale sort of suggested he wanted to sign in. He's been a kind of a long-term target. But I don't think, as of yet, have we seen enough for Sunderland to go and pay what will be a fairly significant fee. I'm not 100% sure we have. Having said that, he's not really played in his strongest positions all that much, and he certainly looked a lot better at wing back in the last few weeks, hasn't he? Which is a position he's far more comfortable with. So at the moment, I would say I'd be surprised, but I definitely wouldn't rule it out. Evans is the interesting one for me because, although, as you mentioned, he's been out for a long time, he's now been back in training for about 5 weeks without interruption. I think he's looked quite sharp in the two games he's come on. I don't think he's looked like someone who's been out for a long time. He's so experienced and he's so effective at what he does. I think he's probably still got something to offer. The point I would make is, because Sunderland haven't really replaced him since he got injured, if they're not going to sign a replacement for him, I'd quite like him to stay on because of what he brings in the dressing room. Because obviously, and also because tactically, he gives you a completely different option to anybody else in the squad. So if Evans was to go and Sunderland were to bring in a similar kind of player and a similarly experienced player, then I would kind of understand that. But if they're not going to go and recruit a similar kind of player, then I'd be quite tempted to see if Evans wanted to stay on, just because I think he brings something different. But I have to say that I think it's more likely with all four, really, that we won't see them in a red and white shirt next year. I definitely think Stiles and Evans are the two who are more likely. But I guess we'll have to wait and see over the coming weeks. You know, the fact of the matter is, I'm sure the head coach will have their own opinion as well.
Mm-hmm. You mentioned the head coach there. That's obviously the big question over the summer. Who are Sunderland going to bring in as their next head coach? Rumours on Sunday morning that René Maric, who's the Bayern Munich under-19s coach, he's been linked with the role, and there's several other names have been linked in recent weeks. But how quickly do you expect Sunderland to make an appointment? Obviously, they've got this game against Sheffield Wednesday this Saturday, final game of the season. Then they'll be back for pre-season in a few weeks after. But are we expecting a head coach appointment like immediately? And obviously, it is important for them to get it done sooner rather than later.
Yeah, I think there is a willingness to try and get it done sooner rather than later. The only thing I would sort of suggest as a possible complicating factor in that is that obviously there are lots of other divisions that run a lot later than the Championship do. And I think realistically part of the reason why Sunderland have waited until the end of the campaign is to make an appointment is because they expect a much better, sort of a much wider pool of candidates, because there'll be people coming to the end of the contracts at other clubs, people leaving other clubs. So I do think, do I expect it to be done like the day after the Sheffield Wednesday game? Possibly. But I wouldn't be surprised if it dragged on a little bit later than that, because I think, yes, other leagues finishing their seasons may yet prove to be a little bit of a complicating factor. But I definitely think, like, I think there's an understanding and a realisation that the season has ebbed away a lot and you definitely need some momentum. And realistically, you know, it's quite a while since Michael Beale was actually left the club. So it's been a very long process already, which hopefully is a good thing. Hopefully it means they can be really thorough and have all the information they need to make a good decision. So I guess my answer to your question is, I think a decision will be made pretty to very quickly. Whether, you know, we know about that straight away, I don't know. It may well be there's a lag while sort of other factors and other leagues and other clubs sort of come to their conclusion. So we'll see. I think a decision will be made pretty quickly, but when we get wind of it, that may yet be a different matter. We'll have to wait and see.
Mm-hmm. And Christian Speakman has said that the new head coach will be able to bring in an assistant or kind of his staff. So where does this leave Mike Dodds now? Obviously, he's had this spell as interim boss. Hasn't gone as well as probably he would have hoped for. Obviously, there was a lot of injuries at the start of his kind of when he was appointed interim head coach to a lot of key players, and looked quite dejected after the game at Watford. Another disappointing afternoon for him. But we expect him to be still part of the coaching staff and back in the role that he was before he took up this interim role?
Yeah, I think so. It would be a genuine shock to me if he was to leave. I think the club, whatever people's opinions are, the club rate him very, very, very highly. They still feel he's got a lot to offer. They've made very clear that they want some continuity for the players and also in sort of the playing style that runs through the club. Now, I know some people will be listening saying, well, we haven't really seen much continuity in the playing style over the last few weeks. I understand the argument, but that's certainly the club's view. They want some element of stability. And the idea being that, you know, then when a new head coach in, not everything changes. So the players still have a sort of thread of continuity, if you like. Dodds himself has made clear to us in the media that he's got no problem going back into his old coaching role. He wants to be head coach, but he's not in any rush. Still feel he's got a lot to learn. I think it's still open to learning from other people. So I would be kind of amazed, to be honest, if Dodds didn't just revert to his previous role. As you said, there will be latitude for whoever is appointed to bring a member of their own staff in, but they'll have to go through the same recruitment process. Do you know what I mean? It won't be just total free reign. So I think that tells you that, you know, those are the conditions that the new head coach will be asked to work under. And Dodds, I think, will definitely be part of that coaching staff. And I imagine Michael Proctor and Alessandro Barcarini as well. It's not just Dodds. Mm-hmm. I expect all, as it stands, unless something significant changes, I expect all three still to be sort of in the coaching staff next season with, like you say, a new head coach and potentially one further addition.
Mm-hmm. Well, Dodds will be taking charge of Sunderland's final game of the season. That's against Sheffield Wednesday at the Stadium of Light this weekend. Wednesday know that a point for them would secure their place in the Championship next season. They got a good 3-0 win over West Brom on Saturday. So, yeah, just need a point coming to Sunderland. And even if they lose the game, it might be enough for them to stay up. They've been in really good form. They've had back-to-back wins. Before the West Brom game, they won 3-1 at Blackburn. In their last games, a few games before that, they had draws in Stoke and Norwich and beat QPR. So unbeaten in five. So it's going to be a tough game for Sunderland. What are we expecting, Phil, in terms of kind of, what do you expect in terms of maybe team selection, what Dodds could do? We saw Tom Watson on the bench at Watford. Will we see many changes to the team, you think? Do we change of shape? What are you kind of expecting?
Yeah, I don't know really. I'm not sure what you think, but everything that we've seen over the last few weeks would suggest that Dodds isn't going to make a huge amount of changes. Also, I don't see him. Yeah, I don't see him suddenly handing out a huge amount of opportunities, just because of the way he's approached it so far. Do I think we'll see a slight sort of softening? I kind of hope so, to be honest. I don't really know what you've got to lose by maybe bringing Watson off the bench, maybe bringing, you know, Ollie Bainbridge or Harrison Jones or one of those players who's really knocking the door down, because the under-21s, I mean, their win yesterday, they've secured a top eight finish, haven't they, in that Premier League, under-21s league, which is a really impressive achievement. So they're going to be in the International Cup next season. They've got a home tie, haven't they, in the playoffs now. Obviously a team that you know really well, that you've watched a lot this year. I don't know which players you think maybe would be in line to come in. So, I think he might bring one or two into the squad, but I don't see him making wholesale changes. I think he's been pretty steadfast in how he's gone about it so far. And realistically, Sheffield are in much better form than Watford are. I think you could look at the form table and argue that they're an even stronger opponent than Watford were. So I suspect that'll be a factor in his thinking as well, and not wanting to upset the balance of the side too much.
Yeah, as you mentioned there, the under-21s getting a win yesterday over Blackburn. So that means they will, well, they'd already qualified in the top 16 of Premier League 2, which means they'll go into the knockout stages of that competition. And they'll get a home tie. They've also qualified for the European competition by finishing in the top 12. And in terms of kind of the players that are probably at the top of that group knocking on the door for a place in the first team, as you mentioned, that Ollie Bainbridge has been someone who stood out in recent weeks, and he has been on the bench. I think it was the game away at Southampton, wasn't it, for the senior team. Harrison Jones has been on the bench and has done really well for the under-21s this season. But as you mentioned, Sheffield Wednesday in great form, it will be very difficult to completely change the team, make five or six changes and bring in a few under-21s players to give them a chance, because it will be a very tough game against Sheffield Wednesday at the Stadium of Light. But that kind of rounds us off for today. Phil, thanks a lot for joining me on today's episode. And we'll, of course, have build up to that game against Sheffield Wednesday this weekend at the Stadium of Light. Remember as well, it is a 12:30 kickoff this weekend. In the meantime, please consider leaving a review and subscribing to the Raw podcast on YouTube, Spotify, wherever you listen to your podcasts. And you can also find us on Shots TV, that is Freeview channel 276. Once again, thanks a lot for listening to the Raw podcast.